Welcome to the Capital Coffee Connection. I am excited today because we have a young, powerful woman leader who is the mayor of Findlay, Ohio, Mayor Christina Murren. And I've not met her before today, so I'm excited to get to know her. And one of the things that I love about this podcast is that we are really trying to have conversations about the heart and the humanity of our elected leaders and not get into politics and policy, which sometimes drags us in crazy directions. And one of the things that I realized, you know, mayors have this really incredible and unique opportunity because really what they are there to do is serve people. There's not a lot between them and the people in the communities who need their help and their support. And one of the things that mayors do is really serve everybody. And I read, Christina, as part of your introduction, and then we're going to just start talking, is that on your website, it says, Christina is a Republican who believes local government should not fall prey to the divisiveness of state and national politics, and that good governing means considering all citizens and making the best decision for the community, not just the easy decisions or the ones that align with their opinion. So on that, which I think is really beautiful and important as a way to introduce you. So Christina, welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. And you certainly have had some great individuals on this podcast before, so I'm excited to be able to join the ranks.
Well, thank you. We're going to talk about what it means to be a mayor in a few minutes, but I'd love to get a little idea of what it meant to grow up in Findlay, because you are from your community and you grew up there, and a little bit about your parents and your family and what it was like to grow up in a small town, not small, but a smaller city that is about 40 miles from Toledo, Ohio.
Yeah. So Findlay, Ohio, it's, as you said, Northwest Ohio, kind of rural USA, but we're kind of direct 100 miles from a lot of metropolitan communities. And we have a lot of big industry. We're the world headquarters of Marathon Petroleum Corporation. Whirlpool Corporation makes all their dishwashers here, Ball Metal, and a lot of other industry, as well as then a strong agricultural community. The Congressional 5th District is one of the largest, you know, agricultural producing districts in the country. Growing up, I'm the third of four girls, so the younger middle child, which I'm not sure is good or bad, really. But my parents were divorced when I was young, but two wonderful people who really put us girls first. My mother was a stay-at-home mom and piano and violin teacher, so I have many connections to the town because they learned music from her over the years. And then my father was a pilot at a local corporation, Findlay Industries, before he actually unexpectedly passed away from a brain aneurysm just at the age of 40 or 41. So definitely had a lot of struggles early in my life dealing with loss and, you know, trauma, but was very fortunate that I also had a really strong support system of people, both my parents and family, but really also my church family that, you know, came alongside me and provided a lot of support to help shape me and make sure that even in dealing with those tough situations that I was able to overcome them and be someone who saw the positive in the world.
So, and one of the things that I did learn about you was about your church. And, you know, as an adult, you've also continued to be very active and you participate not only in mentoring young people, but supporting programs for young people. And you also sing, I understand. So I guess there's a message in there about like being able to pay back and give back what you also received. And how does that feel? And how is faith part of what you do as a mayor and as a leader?
My faith is certainly very important. You know, I think it shapes every aspect of my life. And one thing, though, that I think has been really beneficial for me is that I see both me as a Christian being able to live out my faith and implement those biblical principles, while also being an individual that is a government official and my responsibility is to uphold the Constitution. And so I think that that's really served me well to be able to both see through both of those lenses and balance them out while also making sure that I am, as a government official, you can only do so much that kind of is your own personal belief system. I think it's important to recognize that and help. But I was, you know, meeting with a group of pastors even this morning and talking about how there are things that the church should be doing that government shouldn't be doing. And finding that balance, I think, is increasingly difficult. And again, can be pretty divisive in the world today, but I think is even more crucial today than it has been. And yeah, singing, that's something that I've done growing up and I continue to try to do on the worship team when I have time. It's kind of far and few between these days, but it's always an encouragement, kind of a therapy for me. And then, you know, helping with young people, I think, you know, we say it all the time, our young people are our future. And so being able to come alongside them and make sure that they know that they have people in the community and in their church and in leadership that care about their future and what they're dealing with, I think is really important. And finding time in our days, even if it's, you know, just a couple of minutes to make those connections, can really have a big impact.
Yeah. And I think about like the young person like looking up to you, and you're not that old, you're quite young, but also that you are a mayor. And so like they look at it, and especially young women being able to look and see, oh, you know, this is something that I can do also. Definitely. You know, if you don't see it, sometimes it's hard to believe it.
Yeah. You know, I was very fortunate growing up that my family was always very encouraging. And I really don't remember a time where they were like, oh, you can't do that because you're a girl. Or, oh, you can't do that because you are young. Family always was very encouraging of, you know, being strong, being independent, being a free thinker, engaging in, you know, even, you know, I remember watching the news with my father and grandfather and having discussions around the dinner table and them asking my opinion and then giving me feedback on why that made sense or didn't and helping shape right. that. You know, I think that I've been fortunate in that respect, and anything I can do to, again, be an example that if you are working hard and care about others and have pure motives, that they're, you know, the sky's the limit in what you can do. And that doesn't mean it's going to always be easy or that everybody's going to be encouraging to you. I've certainly faced criticism as a young female in politics, but ultimately that self-confidence and that belief and that network of people that I know believe and support me proves way more beneficial than the critics' voices.
And talk a little bit about school, high school, college, because I know you were very active, and especially in college, you were like part of the student government and you were student government president. And what kind of power did that instill in you, and also ability? But did you have teachers or mentors in school that also, in addition to the church, who were also motivating you as a young leader?
It's really funny looking back. I think anyone who has known me for a period of time before, you know, my adult life, is not surprised that I'm mayor. I joke that like I was the mayor of Findlay since I was 10 years old. I have natural leadership, and I recognize that in myself. I gravitate towards leadership positions, and I really enjoy problem solving and critical thinking. And I think that's so important, especially in politics. So in high school, I am Findlay born and raised, as you said at the beginning, went to Findlay High School, public school, and received so much great support. My government teacher, my sophomore year, I always tell the story of, he really encouraged me where I would walk into the classroom and he would say, okay, here's the topic we're debating today. And here's the pro, here's the con side. Christina, which side do you agree with? And I'd say, you know, I'm pro. And he was like, okay, you're arguing for con then. Mm-hmm. It really challenged me to see the other per side of something that I may have a natural tendency to agree with, to challenge my viewpoint and understand the opposite perspective. And I think that that was really beneficial. And then I went to the University of Findlay. When I was looking at college, we have a great university here in Findlay. And as I evaluated schools across the country, I felt like it was a great fit. And then I had the added benefit that I could live at home and pay as I went, not have to take on school loans. And that was really appealing to me. While there, my freshman year, I kind of was like, okay, I'm going to take a step back. I was so busy in high school with debate and show choir and tennis team and all these things. I'm going to take a step back. And then, of course, my natural tendencies kicked in and I immediately ran for class president. And so I was involved in that, and then was vice president, student body vice president my sophomore year, and then president my junior and senior year. And in the college setting, I was on the tennis team. I was involved in service organizations. I was involved in student government. And I would say that all of my professors were super supportive of me, recognizing that I got a lot of fulfillment. You know, I performed well in the classroom, so they weren't too worried about my performance there. But I really enjoyed being engaged, being out representing the school, being at different meetings. And they were very encouraging to me of like, not all learning happens just in the classroom, right? There's a lot of development that occurs, and engaging in the world around you that's so critical So I was very fortunate that my professors were supportive of me in all those responsibilities that I took on. And by my senior year of college, I was student body president, planning a wedding in a Joanne Davidson Ohio Leadership Institute, which is a political institute, and working a part-time job while finishing my double major. So I like to be busy, as you can tell, but I've been very fortunate that I have so many people around me that are supportive and recognize that in me.
It's quite impressive to think about all that before, you know, and that you, and then you got married at, how old were you when you got married?
That's a great question. So literally a month after I graduated college, so probably 21, 22. Yeah, actually, I'll be celebrating 10 years of marriage this June. So that's really exciting.
Congratulations. That's beautiful.
Thank you.
How does your husband deal with that you're a female leader? And obviously, there's a lot of demands on your time and your energy.
Yeah, it was funny. He definitely knew what he was signing up for. Again, we actually met my freshman year of college, his sophomore year of college. And one of our first outing together was actually to a political lunch. I was attending it. And he is not at all political. And I invited him to attend with me. And then we, you know, it was game on since then. And so he, you know, is definitely hesitant. And, you know, I think as any husband would be or any spouse would be, is protective, right? He doesn't like seeing the criticism and hate that I deal with. But when I first was contacted at seeking the appointment and then running for mayor,
right,
because prior mayor stepped down to take a position at the state level, I had to get appointed. He initially was like, no, we're not interested. That's flattering that they thought of you, but I don't think that that's what we're into. And I said, listen, babe, like, I won't do it if you're not going to be supportive. If that's truly how you feel, I'm not going to do this. I said, but how about you take a little bit more time to think about it and, you know, call me back. And he took a little time and he called me back and he said, you know what, if this is where God has it wants you to be, then it will happen. And if not, then it's where you're supposed to be. And I know you. I know you would do a wonderful job at it. And I know you would regret it if you didn't see if this was where you were supposed to go. And so he was really supportive. He hates campaigning. We have a deal. I don't make him go door to door. But he's super supportive and understands that my time is, sometimes we don't see each other awake for multiple days, and that's the reality of it. But when we are together, we really try to focus on spending that time together and being focused and, you know, setting down the phones and doing things and being intentional about to make sure it's that quality time together. So I'm very fortunate to have him supporting me. And he says that it's, you know, it's a tough job being first gentleman and being wined and dined to death.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That sounds like you have a good balance.
You know, I think that's something that I learned, and I tell other mayors, I've been mayor for 5 years now. And when I first took over, I felt like I had to say yes to everything, right? Somebody would reach out and want me to kick off a 5K on a Saturday morning at 7 a.m. And unless I had something else on my schedule, I felt like I had to say yes. And I very quickly realized that I don't have to have a reason to say no. You know, saying no is sometimes because you need that time on a Saturday morning to rest, or, you know, you need time with family, or you got to, you know, take a little vacation, or, you know, you can't be at four different events within a 1 hour time frame. That's not realistic. And so I think that that's something that takes some practice and intentionality, but I've really tried to make sure that I don't overwhelm myself and that I don't have to say yes to everything, and people understand that.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. I think as women, it's also hard because we want to be pleasing and we want to be helpful and we want to, you know, show that we can do it. But you're right, there's limits to what we can do. So one of the things, one of the areas that you worked in before becoming the mayor that I think is just important to touch on because it's really critical, especially in our country at this time, is the work you did with around opioids, addiction, and could you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that while it isn't political, it affects everybody.
Yeah.
It is something that does touch almost everybody that is going to listen or watch this podcast.
Yeah. So in my previous position, I worked with a company that partnered with hospitals to run outpatient pain management centers. And we were really focused on getting people off of opioids and doing more interventional medication and procedures to help people with chronic pain. If you really look at the history of opioids, right, they started out of the premise of doctors being rated on their pain control. But our body naturally tells us when we are in pain, when something is wrong. And so being pain-free is not realistic, but that's kind of the mindset that culture created in healthcare. And so I was fortunate to be in working with a company that was really trying to help people get away from opioids. We obviously know how addictive and concerning they can be, especially long term. So I think that having that medical knowledge and how the insurance system works and how insurance reimbursement works and that whole system, because that was part of what I was doing, was the business development, working with hospitals to do the contracting, looking at their performas, and then physician recruiting and contracting, I think has really served me well in this position, not just because I had the relationships with our local medical community, which was very helpful during COVID, but because I understand how the system works. And I think when we talk about healthcare in the United States, there's a lot of misunderstanding or lack of knowledge, which creates a lot of problems. But certainly opioids, you know, and now we are really seeing fentanyl, I think stem back to really our mental health in the United States, and how so many people are struggling with loneliness, undiagnosed mental health issues, whether it's, you know, low level kind of anxiety to extreme schizophrenia. There's this whole spectrum of mental health and mental illness that I think we're just really starting to talk about and wrap our arms around. And many times those traumatic events, you know, we talk about the ACEs or adverse childhood experiences, that I don't think that as a culture we really talk about to help us understand we have all dealt with trauma and we process those in different ways. And there are healthy ways and there are unhealthy ways. And so I'm really hoping, you know, whether it's through work with the Ohio Mayors Alliance or the U.S. Conference of Mayors or partnerships with other organizations, that mayors start having more conversations about that. I know the U.S. Conference of Mayors heavily focused on mental health right now. Good. But I think so many people just need to understand how we all have triggers and we all have different traumas that we've dealt with. And some people deal with those through addiction, and that spirals into a lot of other unhealthy behaviors. But we need to talk about it, that this is not just, you know, one group of people. This is one group of people that may have a more unsocially acceptable method of coping, but we need to talk about mental health and mental illness more in this country and start preventing it and treating it rather than putting it into shadows that lead people to unsafe behavior.
Yeah, no, it's very well said. And I think also when I read about the work you've done with regards to the support for the YMCA, which is helping children and giving them community and making sure that, like, in green spaces that you have spaces that people can use as outlets for their, whether it's sports or whatever they need. Can you, you know, as we talk about being a mayor, one of the things that you do worry about is the welfare of your people. And how do you take care of that in terms of the places that people have for services, not necessarily mental health, but just to be able to go out and play, go out and be in community? Because that's a big part of where we're at now, where people don't feel like they're part of a community.
Yeah, that's a great point. And certainly, you know, as mayors, as government officials, we have kind of a couple levels, right? We have the core services that we need to provide. Then as mayors, we have the convening power to be able to bring groups together that we can help create structure and efficiency around to solve problems. But then building community and that kind of community culture is the most challenging part. And one thing that I've been trying to kind of think on and adapt into how I serve as mayor is we have historically really focused government, city government in Findlay has just focused on those kind of core services and not thought about creating the third place. And the third place is a concept of everybody needs three places that they feel connected to in their daily living. For most adults, it's their work environment, it's their home environment, and then what else? Maybe it's service organization, maybe it's church, you know, whatever it may be. But one of the big things that we're seeing is people need that, especially young families or youth, need that to be a third place that is free. And that is, I think, a unique opportunity that city governments have, is to create green spaces, create a safe, free environment for people to connect. And we have, you know, if you look at the last 15, 20 years, we hear all the studies say that we have all kind of gone back into our homes and we don't sit on the front porch and wave to our neighbors anymore. We right. sit in our backyard so that nobody talks to us. You know, there's all these examples. And that is, again, kind of contributing to our poor mental health because we're not connecting to others or we're not connecting to others in healthy ways. So trying to create more free recreational environments, especially, you know, in the Midwest where we don't necessarily have easy access to large parks or beaches, whatever it may be, creating trails, creating park environments, connecting paths is something that I think is really important, something I've put an emphasis on, and continuing to partner with local nonprofit organizations that have similar causes for creating, you know, spaces for healthy living in community is really important and something that I'm excited to continue to see develop in Findlay.
And you also said in something that I watched that about the people of Findlay, that they're very special people.
Yeah, you know, I think all mayors probably feel that way about our families, right? That's how we treat our citizens. But I would say, you know, Findlay is really unique in that we are a mix of kind of blue collar and white collar, but Midwesterners are just very hardworking, dedicated people who want to, I would say, who want to engage in community, that want to help others, that want to sit at the coffee shop and, you know, share life stories. I think that that's just how we are. And I think we continue to need to develop that in different ways because younger generations seek that out differently than some of our, you know, kind of existing or prior generations. But I would say we're very special people and that, and the other thing is that we're problem solvers. I would say Findlay, that is something we're unique about. We talk about the Findlay formula, and that was coined after we won Top Micropolitan by Site Selection magazine, either the second or third time. We've now won it 10 times in a row. So we have that serves us well. But it's the idea that government, business, and education have to work together to solve problems, whether it's solving a problem to bring in a new business or solving problems like transportation or housing or mental health. And so we've been fortunate that the United Way, through their community conversations many years ago, kind of identified some of the core challenges our community was facing. And then we were able to structure support to work together as a community to solve those problems. So we're all rowing in the same direction. And I think that that's really helped us be leaps and bounds among some of our peers on issues like substance abuse and addiction. Yeah. Because we're working all together and we know who's kind of leading the charge and what role we all play in supporting them.
Tell me, what's the best advice you've ever received?
Oh my goodness. Best advice I have ever received was probably a woman who was a CFO here in town for a large corporation. And she was speaking to a women's leadership luncheon. And she said, you know, people all the time ask me about work-life balance and how do I maintain work-life balance? And I've discovered that people think that work-life balance means every day is balanced. And I want you to know that every day is not balanced. Some days are going to be all work. Other needs to be all family. And what I have been able to do through that is understand, not feel guilty when the day is something different than what I expected it to be, and not feel that I'm letting a party down because I am being present in dealing with the issue I'm dealing with or being there for my family.
Right.
That has been really beneficial to me because I know that even if I'm not in the office and I need to be with my, you know, family for a medical emergency, my mother-in-law passed away earlier this year and I was at the hospital with her and dealing with that for a couple of weeks. And, you know, my team was handling things and I didn't need to feel guilty because I know I needed to be at the hospital dealing with that. And I could still, you know, when we were sitting in the waiting room, take care of work stuff. But then there are other days where I am fully dedicated to work and for 15 hours I am in the trenches and I'm not responding to text messages from my sisters. I'm not responding to personal emails and my husband knows that I'll see him when I see him. And that's okay too. And giving, I think many times women forget to give themselves the grace that they would give to others. And I think we have to be really graceful and give ourselves leniency in when we're dealing with the tensions in our lives. And that was really good advice that I received many years ago and has served me well. Yeah.
No, the idea of the grace and women allowing for it is beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to ask you a few rapid questions just to get to know a little bit of some of the likes and dislikes. The first one is, what is your favorite sound?
The ocean, waves.
Yeah, in the middle. And you have to go there to get to that.
Well, you know, Lake Erie.
Okay. So
it is just about 45 minutes away, and it's pretty much the ocean for those who haven't visited the Great Lakes. It's very similar, but yes, just being by the water and that calm, even a brook, you know, something like that is very relaxing to me.
Favorite color?
Navy blue.
Your favorite smell?
Ooh, probably like the air after it rains, and it just is kind of like clean and a little humid. I think that's always a nice smell.
And do you do exercise?
Not as much as I should, which is, I'm sure, is pretty much what we all say. But I do try to do a little bit of like yoga every evening to stretch after standing in heels or at a desk all day and calm my mind a bit.
And who's your biggest cheerleader?
Probably my husband. I think he's always very supportive of me. And even though he may not engage much in politics, he always is talking about the things that he knows that I'm passionate about and encouraging me and speaking kindly to others about me.
If you were on a desert island and you could have one meal, what would that meal be?
Okay, so this one's going to be needs a little explanation. I would have the meal Polynesian, and this is a family tradition meal, and it is rice, chicken, cheese, tomatoes, celery, pineapple, almonds, coconut, green onions, and I think there's one other thing, but it's set up in like a buffet style, so you can make your own combination. But I always enjoy that meal because it's like healthy, crunchy, salty, sweet.
It sounds amazing.
It's amazing.
Flavors.
Yes.
And what is it called?
It's called Polynesian. That's what my family has.
Oh, it's just called Polynesian. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was Polynesian, but it's called Polynesian.
Well, it may be. I don't know where it came from, but that's something that my family's done for generations for holiday meals and whatnot. And it's healthy and yummy. And I think it sounds like a great island meal.
It does. It actually fits into an island. So that's good. What is your favorite household chore?
Dishes. Doing the dishes. I think it can be kind of mindless, but you see the fruits of your labor right away. Though I have to say, I'm very fortunate. My husband pretty much does all the housekeeping. He takes good care of me.
Where in the world have you and your husband dreamed to travel that you haven't been?
So I'd like to go to Paris. We've talked about kind of spending some time in France and traveling there, and have not had the opportunity to go yet.
You sound like you're quite busy. But the last question that I've asked everybody, and they've been beautiful answers and very different, but really from the heart, is what is your definition of joy? What brings you joy? If you have joy, how can you share that with others? So it's a full idea of what does joy mean to you?
That is a wonderful question. I would say, you know, joy to me is seeing, well, what brings me joy is seeing the impact that I have on the world, helping other people. You know, when I look around the community, you know, this is the city where I have been born and raised, and I get a lot of joy thinking of how I'm transforming it for the future and how I'm able to, you know, drive down the streets and see the impact that I've had and knowing that it is going to benefit others. And I think, you know, joy is having people feel valued and that they belong. That's the ultimate kind of desire and would help spread joy and bring joy to others.
Well, first, thank you. It was a beautiful answer. and I get it. And, you know, I love that you have found a career and work. And, you know, you may not have thought this is what you would be doing when you were 32. But the fact that at 32, you're able to do so much for so many others is joyful.
It is.
And I think about the young people in your community that have this young, beautiful, intelligent woman who is really there for them and trying to make a place for them to grow up that you were, you know, blessed to live in as a young person. So that part is what I will leave with, which is that you do spread joy each and every day. Well, maybe not each and every day, but almost every day. We talk about it every day.
We try.
Right. But you try. And that's what this is really about, is like, you know, the goodness and the kindness and the compassion and really believing in people. And that's really what our leaders should all be about. The other stuff is there, but really the character. And thank you for sharing your character and sharing your heart and your humanity with us today.
My pleasure, Liz. Thank you for having me.
Hi, it's Liz. Please join me every Tuesday for coffee to talk about heart and humanity with our elected leaders. Ciao.